today I'm talking with storyteller Michael Williams, who has recently returned from Israel, where he was a participant in an international storytelling festival for peace.
The festival was really was the climax of a six-week program. The program started at Emerson College in England, near Forest Row, at Emerson College's School of Storytelling, called Healing Words, Storytelling as a Pathway to Peace, which had invited 12 storytellers from the UK and other countries around the world. So there were storytellers from the United States, India, Australia, Israel, Palestine, Canada, Sweden, as well as the UK. So I'm originally from Canada, but I was also the only storyteller representing Scotland. So that was an honor, you know, to be there in that capacity. So we spent 4 weeks at Emerson doing this intensive course in advanced storytelling techniques and peacemaking techniques. So we spent most of the time from 8:30 in the morning till 4 or 5 in the evening, 5 days a week, in a group, preparing our stories, receiving individual coaching, group coaching, working on workshops that we had been invited to go to Israel and Palestine to deliver. So we were preparing for those 4 weeks for the two-week tour in the Holy Land. And that two-week tour then culminated in the festival at a place called Kibbutz Harduf in the Galilee, Sea of Galilee region of Israel. I've just been back less than a week, and I've been thinking a lot about the trip to the Holy Land and telling people about what we did and the places we saw. But I'm also remembering the time spent at Emerson, because it was such an important time, coming together as a group, getting to know one another. Yeah, it was an interesting, sort of adjustment. So you have to go through a lot of group process as well. So that was really valuable, and I learned a great deal about myself, as well as other people. And I learned a huge amount about storytelling. I think all of us, at one time or other in those 4 weeks, came to the conclusion that we weren't storytellers. You know, somebody described it as being taken apart and then being put back together again. And I think that's really apt. I think there were times I certainly felt like that. The main fellow who carries a lot of the work at the School of Storytelling is a storyteller by the name of Royi Galor, who's Israeli by birth, but has been living in England and teaching at Emerson for, I think, the last 7 or 8 years. He's fantastic. He's just an amazing storyteller, an amazing group facilitator, and I really just owe so much to him, because he was just an expert coach, you know, who watches you very, very closely and gives you these gifts of the gift of feedback, you know. And it's not just, you know, you're great, or that's really good, or keep doing that. There were very specific things that he was able to give you that you could work with. And then he would give you the time to work with them and rework your material and rework it again and then approach it from different angles. And I think in many ways I learned, you know, more in 4 weeks than I learned in 4 years. I mean, it was really remarkable. Which, I mean, I went to the program intending it to be an opportunity to really step up in my game, as it were. You know, I wanted to be challenged, and I got that. And in the background, we had people in the Holy Land who were preparing things for us, who were preparing our itinerary and all the sort of logistics that were required to move 14 people around the country, up and down the country into different venues. So when we arrived, you know, there was a plan, you know, there was a tour in place, and we worked really hard for 2 weeks. But every day, we performed and offered workshops in a different venue to a different audience. The program was called Healing Words, and the reason for that was that it was based around the idea that storytelling was a vehicle for bringing people together, to facilitate dialogue, to encourage people to share their stories with one another, as a way of transforming conflict between people, in this particular case, between Arabs and Jews, and Palestinians and Israelis. So every group of people that we met were, for the most part, groups of Arabs and Jews, Israelis and Palestinians, who in most cases had never met one another before, but wanted to begin the process of interacting with one another and exchanging stories and listening to one another. And so they had invited us to facilitate that as storytellers. So the storytellers that were invited on the program were also people who work in that area, work in the area of facilitating dialogue between groups. So for example, one storyteller, in addition to her performing in schools and with groups and so on, also works with bereaved families. So that skill, you know, was needed, and you know, she had the opportunity to welcome with or work with bereaved families in Israel. And I work a lot with teenagers and children and adults, and I do a lot of work in peace education and conflict work, so I had an opportunity to bring those skills as well as my storytelling skills. So it was a real challenge, and that was the other reason for me going, was to again, you know, kind of step up and meet a greater challenge than, you know, than the one that I meet on a kind of day-to-day basis in my work back here in Scotland. So it was really exciting, you know, to really be tested and to put your skills to the test and learn more skills. Learn from the people that you're meeting, learn from the facilitators that are working there on the ground. Yeah, it was just very rich. But just as an example, the first day we arrived, the first full day we were at work, we met with ex-soldiers, a group called Combatants for Peace. And these are ex-Palestinian and ex-Israeli soldiers who've made a decision to lay down their arms and work for peace. They're not, obviously, they're not supported by the mainstream military or the government, so often they have to work somewhat in secret. Their activities are monitored, often by the government, by the security forces. So it was interesting because this was the very first day, we got in the cars, we headed off on the highway to meet at a secret location, which we weren't told about, until the last moment, when the call came on a mobile phone, and we met the leader at a highway stop, who then told us where we were going, gave us instructions on where we're going. We followed him, and we ended up meeting in an olive grove in a divided village, in a kind of no man's land, between a village that had been divided by the military, so that the one side had been taken over by Jewish settlers, and the other side was Palestinian and had, in a sense, become a refugee camp. It was a refugee camp. The people were now no longer permitted to travel from one half of the village to the other half of the village. So I think it was rather symbolic for us to meet in the middle, in this kind of no man's land. So we did, and Palestinian villagers came out to meet us, along with the soldiers, and some Jewish settlers came to meet us as well. So this was the first time, this was very unique, and I don't think we realized the gravity of the situation until we got there, was that we had been invited, and that's another important thing, is that we weren't going out there just to be do-gooders. We, in each case, in every event, we were invited to come. So the Combatants for Peace had invited us to come and facilitate dialogue between the two sides. Now, even the Palestinian, ex-Palestinian soldiers and ex-Israeli soldiers, although they had worked as their own groups, they had never collaborated before. Their leaders had met one another, but this was the first time that these two groups of ex-soldiers were meeting together, and they had invited 25 guests, visitors of their own from the Palestinian and Israeli side. And in fact, in the end, it swelled to an even larger group. There were over 100 people that arrived. The Palestinian media were there, the television crews were there. We met on straw mats in this olive grove with canvas to protect us from the sun. And we sat and with one another, met one another, and then we listened to the stories in turn from ex-Palestinian soldiers and ex-Israeli soldiers. And some very harrowing stories, as you can imagine. Men and women, because women soldiers as well, both sides. Men and women who had been involved in, you know, the violence of war, who had killed, who in some cases had been sent out as assassins, but who had made the decision, you know, that violence wasn't the path they wanted to follow anymore. So they shared those stories, and then there was some time for questions and feedback. And then our role came into being. We were asked to form three groups of about 30, 35 people each. And I was asked to facilitate one of the groups. That was, you know, it was prearranged. I had volunteered to do that, and I knew that I would be doing that at some point. So suddenly I had a huge circle of people that I was responsible for. I had another storyteller, a colleague, that was there with me to support me. And just suddenly there's a group of some Palestinian soldiers, Israeli soldiers, Jewish settlers, Palestinian refugees, settlers, and villagers, and so on. All ages. There was children there, teenagers, young men, women, older men, older women, sitting in a circle all looking at me. What's next? You know, this is the first time these people have sat together. So there was tension. You could feel the tension. And you could feel the expectation and the anticipation, and everybody's looking at you like, what are you going to do? Yeah, it was really moving. And so, you know, we just began by with a song. And one of the Palestinian soldiers sang a traditional Arabic song, which sort of broke the ice, and those that knew it joined in. And then I sang a Scottish song, Aiken Drum, and got the kids adding bits to the song. And again, that was great, you know, just sort of helped break the ice. We traded that back and forth. And then I just did some movement that, you know, you might do in a workshop. Very simple movement where people are imitating you. And I just explained through the translator. I had a Palestinian older man and a father who translated for me. And he was fantastic. He was really good. It was just, this movement exercise was just to remind us that we were all kids at heart, you know. And people responded to that. It was great. So once people felt a little bit more relaxed, the main question that we had been asked to work with was to ask people, when did you first wake up to the conflict? And that was the question that would be at the root of the story, the stories that people would share. And again, it was invitation. People didn't have to share their stories. There was no pressure. It was, you know, inviting people to do so. But people did, and there was time to go around the circle for people to share their stories. Yeah, we heard some pretty harrowing stories. You know, stories of brutality, stories of death, being wounded, being imprisoned, being brutalized by the military. You know, particularly we heard a lot of stories on the Palestinian side of what it's like to live in a refugee camp, to be prevented from leaving your village, or having to have permits that you have to apply for weeks in advance. The difficulties of living, you know, in such conditions, having the village divided and so on. And on the Jewish side, we heard stories of fear of suicide bombings, fear of rockets coming down on them, just the uncertainty of what kind of world they're going to live in, guilt, stories of guilt. There are a number of Jewish people who are quite aware of what's happening in their country and don't feel good about it, don't feel supportive, but not sure what to do. There was a lot of sharing that went on, and men and women. So there was a lot of that happened. And then in the middle of that, the Israeli army showed up. And these armored vehicles came down the road. Soldiers hopped out with their machine guns, came running down and yelling at us to break it up, to disperse, that we were meeting illegally, and sort of gesturing in a threatening way for us to move or be arrested. And what struck me was how young these soldiers were. In Israel, young people have to serve in the military, I think, between the ages of 18 and 22. So these are like rosy-cheeked soldiers in uniform with machine guns and rifles, you know, who are being soldiers, but at the same time, when you look at them, you can see the fear in them. And they're kind of running down, and, you know, there we are all sitting there, obviously having this meeting. And in a way, they're not quite sure what to do. You know, they're just kind of telling us to move on, break up. Fortunately, the coordinators of the event, who had been soldiers themselves and were older, went and sort of took them aside to speak to them and negotiate with them. And the soldiers ended up leaving and then coming back again and trying it again to break us up. And that happened actually several times. Of course, what happened in our group is it created tension in our group. Many of the young Palestinian men got up and became quite aggressive and took this real aggressive stance in a lot of posturing, you know, towards the soldiers. And it was a moment, I mean, I'll never forget it, because it challenged me. And what I had to do at that moment was, we're right in the middle of a woman, a Jewish woman, telling her story when this happened. And the Palestinians got up, the young men, and they were angry. And they were posturing. And I had to say, through the translator, very quickly, was to say, tell your young men that what they're doing is the old story. You know, to use a storytelling metaphor, is to say, that's an old story. That's the story of revenge and hate. And we all know that story. We've heard it today. You've been telling us about that story. But please, I just ask them, invite them to sit down, because what we're doing in the circle is writing a new story. And so the man quickly translated that. And then these young men turned and looked at me. And it was like, oh, you know, this is when you're like, am I just some kind of liberal left-wing, you know, peacenik, you know? But they looked at me, and then they sat down. Just as they were sitting down, I asked again through the translator. I remembered that the ex-soldiers in their stories talked about, how do you take your anger and transform it into something positive? That's what these ex-soldiers were working on. And they had asked us, you know, that was their challenge to us. Could we talk about that? Could we do that? And I said, you know, there it was. There was the opportunity right there. It was real. Like, it wasn't just theory. It was real. And these young men, you could see their anger. Here, once again, are Israeli soldiers coming to tell them what to do. And I said to them, are you angry? And they said, yeah. They shook their heads. They said, yeah, of course we are. And I said, how can you help us? Can you show us? What can you do with the anger? And then came back to the translator, and he said to me, it's very hard. It's very hard. And that's, you know, and I could acknowledge that. I mean, you know, I didn't have any secret story or answer to give them to help. But, I thought that was very courageous of them, and I told them that, you know. I thought how courageous it was for them to sit down again and to listen to me, a stranger. You know, they didn't know me. So we continued. We ignored the soldiers, who eventually retreated to the road, to their vehicles, and then they agreed that they would just monitor us from the distance. And I guess what happened was we agreed that we would break up by 6 o'clock that evening, instead of going on into the evening as we had originally intended. So it was a fair compromise, and there was no more confrontation. So we continued the circle. We managed to continue through the stories, and when we finished, it was wonderful, because all this conversation and dialogue just kept continuing after the circle finished. And it was so lovely the way we finished, too, because we finished with a song again. And this time, the translator invited his three young daughters who were there, and they were 6, 7, 8 years old. And they got up, and they were so unpretentious and just so not shy, you know. They just got up right in the middle of us all, and they did this wonderful traditional Arabic children's song that you imagine children probably sing in the streets or in the playground or whatever. And the three of them, and they had this clapping and dancing, and they had us all doing it. And that was the way it finished. Just finished with all this wonderful applause and laughter, and it was wonderful how the kids brought us all together. And then conversations just continued on, and then the villagers came out and they brought us sandwiches and soft drinks, you know, tin drinks. And we just stood there in the olive grove, just talking, people shaking hands, hugging, and so on, gradually dispersing and going home. I was talking to one of the other storytellers from one of the other groups, asking them how their group had gone on. And suddenly the man, the translator, this older Palestinian man, came up to me and took my hands in his hands. And he had tears in his eyes. And he said, I just want to tell you how proud I am of you and how proud I am of all of us. And I was going, oh, thank you so much, you know, thank you, you know, that was so wonderful to have this opportunity. And he said, I just want to say thank you for reminding us and reminding me, he said, of the old story and the new story. He said, you reminded me that the real power is in the circle with the people. And he said, I just want peace for everybody. He said, I just want peace for Jewish people, for Palestinian people, for everybody. He said, I don't want harm for anybody. Here was a man, we'd heard his story too, here was a man who'd been imprisoned for some years, who had his right to work taken away from him. He's restricted to the village, he can't travel. I don't know how he supports his family. He had a wife and three daughters there. He's unable to work, so I don't know how, what he does. And here was, you know, a man who was like just so peaceful, had every reason to be angry and fighting back, but who believed in what we were doing and believed that story and telling your story and sharing stories was one of the ways to, you know, to do that. And I'm not pretending at all that it's the only answer, but I saw firsthand that story really does have a healing power. I mean, I saw Jewish people and Palestinian people, Israelis and Palestinians, saying, you know, themselves saying, Jewish woman who said, this is the first time in my whole life, she's a middle-aged woman, first time in my whole life I've ever sat down beside a Palestinian or an Arab person and talked to them. She said, I've never, ever done that. I could have never dreamed at one time that I would have ever done that. So that was the first day. That was day one, you know. And then, you know, like the next day, we were with a completely different group. In fact, I think the next day was in Jerusalem with teenagers, Arab and Jewish teenagers. And that was remarkable in its own right. But the point is we met with women's groups, Arab and Jewish women, you know, meeting together. In some of them, fairly well-to-do women who were professional people, lawyers, politicians, doctors, teachers, and so on. Then we met with another in a community center in a place called Akko, largely Arab town. Arab and Jewish women again, but very at the other end of sort of the scale, a lot of unemployment, poverty, and that was a remarkable project as well. But the point is that whenever we met with these groups, they were all there because at some level they believed that story and telling your story and listening to other people's story was a way of some greater understanding. So the name of the project, Healing Words, like it was real. I think probably up until then, in my own work, I know it's true. I know words can heal. I know they can harm as well. But it was so remarkable to see it, to be able to go out and do this work and to see it work. Yeah, they're small steps. You know, I mean, you know, none of us came away thinking we were going to solve the problems of the Middle East or anything like that. But we saw in a small way, you know, each little step. It was a little contribution, and the feedback we got was very positive. People were really genuinely grateful for making the effort and doing this, and we heard that over and over again. And I've had some emails, you know, from people there. Again, just coming back to us saying, you know, thank you so much. And I think it meant a lot, too, that we came from the different countries that we came from, that we came from the international community, and that we cared enough to be there and to listen to their stories. And I remember, we heard this over and over again, but I remember these young people in the refugee camp, in the Palestinian refugee camp, and adults saying to us, you know, if nothing else, please, when you go home, they said, just please tell our stories. Just tell, you don't have to make it up, just tell what you saw and what you heard. That's all. And I think there was a sense on both sides, on the Jewish side and on the Palestinian side, that people out there didn't know their stories. You know, they were afraid that they were isolated, that the world didn't really know the real stories of ordinary people. You know, there's probably a perception in some quarters that all Arabs or all Palestinians are terrorists. We heard that too. We heard people say that to us in some sections of Israeli, you know, communities. Just as we heard people on the other side said, you know, all Jewish people, you know, hate us or are against us or so on and so on. But what we saw over and over again was just ordinary people, you know, who just want peace, who just wanted to be able to tell their stories, wanted an opportunity and a safe space to be able to tell their stories without being judged, just heard. So that's what the project was about. That's you know, over 14 days, that's what we did almost every day, up and down the country in different venues. So it was a great project. I mean, I obviously, I, very enthusiastic, but it really changed me. I mean, it changed the way, I just believe in storytelling. I just think, storytelling is, it's an amazing, it's a, there's techniques, it's a skill, it's a pastime, it's all kinds of things, but it's entertaining, it's inspiring, it makes things happen, so I came back absolutely determined that that's all I'm going to do. I'm just going to be a full-time storyteller. I mean, I kind of knew that beforehand. That was partly the reason I went on the program, was to really kind of make that commitment to doing that. But if anything, I mean, it didn't deter me. It only made me feel more certain, more sure that this is definitely the right path to follow. I learned a lot in terms of working with conflict. There's a lot of conflict here too in Scotland and other parts of the world. Middle East doesn't have a monopoly on it. And conflict is, it's healthy too. I mean, conflict is, we need conflict in our world to kind of, be able to do things and meet challenges and so on. So, but it's how we manage it and resolve extreme forms of conflict. And I think storytelling, I did feel convinced that storytelling is a useful tool. And I'm fortunate that I have other tools because I've been a teacher and I've been a social worker. So I'm aware that there are other tools at my disposal that I can use. But now I can add storytelling, and I think it's a very powerful means of bringing people together and facilitate dialogue. So I would certainly, it would certainly be a dream of mine to follow that line of work more intently and more consciously, to bring that more into my, my work as a way of making a living. And that's what I'm very keen at the moment. I'm going away to Canada next week, with a couple of invitations to come in and offer workshops based on the work that we did in the Middle East. I'm looking at coming back in September and also then sharing the fruits of that work a little more intently, to offer workshops or trainings and storytelling performances very much with the healing words ethos in mind. And to work with people and to collaborate with other storytellers, social workers, people in mediation, teachers, people in healthcare, and so on, who are interested, because I think collaboration is a very is the way forward, to for storytellers, is to work with other professionals and to combine your skills, and then I think we have much more to offer. So yeah, I think storytelling is a very honorable profession. We're not just entertainers. My dream would be that it would be my profession. People say to me, Michael, what do you do? And I say, I'm a storyteller.